Today's episode of the Film Stage Show is brought to you by Mubi, the online streaming cinema. For your free 30-day trial, go to mubi.com/filmstage. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of the Film Stage Show, the movie review podcast for thefilmstage.com. As always, I'm your host, Brian J. Rowan, and with me today, fellow passengers, Michael Snydell.
Hello.
Bill Graham.
Woo!
And our favorite special guest, Allison Shoemaker.
Hello.
How is everyone doing today?
Good. I'm great. I'm low-key. I was covered in coffee a couple minutes ago. Now I'm not. That's awesome.
Well, that's good. Yes, so we are here today to talk about the new film from Yame Kole Serra, a filmmaker whose name I still don't quite know how to say, but who I love, and that is The Commuter, starring Liam Neeson. And welcome back, everyone who listens to the show regularly. Coming off of the Call Me By Your Name podcast, if you're still with us, why? But we're very glad to have you. Allison, how's New Year been?
Oh, good. It's been, you know, cold and then not cold and then cold and then not cold. And as a result, my sinuses are in open revolt. But other than that, it's been a very good and busy New Year. How about you all?
The same.
Sounds
cold,
about the same for
not
me.
Not cold. Oh, Bill, come on. Dallas.
Hey, I am
relatively,
not used to this still.
Relatively cold.
I'm not used to this.
Yeah, my mother was talking about how in Houston it's like, oh, it got down to 30. We had to run our water like at night because we didn't want the pipes to burst. And I was like, Mom, as a New Yorker, you should be ashamed of yourself.
It was 13 degrees yesterday.
Yeah. Oh, man. So what better way to heat up than watching a tense action thriller? And, of course, that is The Commuter. Before we get into the review, the usual nonsense, follow us on Twitter at Film Stage Show. Give us a comment and a rating on iTunes. Follow us on Facebook. Search for The Film Stage Show. Email us, podcast@thefilmstage.com. And, that's about it. You can also help support this wonderful podcast by going to patreon.com/thefilmstageshow and giving us some money to help us produce even more wonderful content. We're currently making enough off of Patreon that we're doing a monthly classic film review. January's review will be of Paris, Texas by Wim Wenders.
Woo!
So look forward to that. It's going to be awesome. And for as little as $1 an episode, you can help us do even more cool stuff like that, in addition to getting access to our super special secret Slack channel. In addition, if you'd like to support us and support one of the best streaming sites on the internet, you can go to mubi.com/filmstage to get a free 30-day trial to Mubi. Mubi actually is releasing a film in theaters, which makes them infinitely better than Netflix. Cheap shot. That is Lover for a Day by Philippe Garrel, and it stars his daughter, Esther Garrel. And it is playing, if you are in New York, at Film Society of Lincoln Center, January 26th at LA's Music Hall Lamel. Lamelle? I honestly don't know how to say that. I'm sure if you go there, they will tell you where to go, or you can visit loverforaday.mubi.com for a full list of screenings across the country. Again, a free 30-day trial of Mubi, which introduces a new film each day that you then have 30 days to watch, so you have a constantly rotating selection to 30 films, can be had by going to mubi.com/filmstage. And that's about it. Any movie news that we want to go over? There's been some critics' awards.
Also, some more sexual assault allegations.
Yeah,
so that's great.
We always got those.
There's the whole thing with Mark Wahlberg that has been entertaining, to say the least.
Yeah,
entertaining and depressing at the same time.
I'm so uncertain how to even talk about the Mark Wahlberg thing, just because I don't know like how much was him saying like I need more money, and how much was his agent just being like my man doesn't get out of bed for less than 1.5.
But it's also awkward that it's the same agent as Michelle Williams.
That's the problem. Yes.
Yeah. That's the biggest issue is one agency that represents them both didn't get them even close to equal pay. Like, it wasn't even close at all. So yeah. I don't understand how that agency can be like, oh, yeah. But the interesting thing about it is that more than likely they approached Michelle Williams first to see if she would work basically for free. And once she said, oh, yeah, like, you know, I'll definitely do this favor for y'all, then it put Mark Wahlberg into the position of having all the money in the world to basically kind of, you know, leverage his position and be like, oh, well, I'm the only one that hasn't said yes of the principal actors. Okay. You know, yes.
That's a really good endorsement for collective bargaining for all my socialists out there.
Yeah. So how much was him and how much it was the agency is still completely unknown, but yeah.
Indeed. There's that. There's everything related to the Me Too moment. There's information coming out about James Franco. There was even a story that came out about Aziz Ansari.
Yeah. But,
you know, I don't know. Other than letting people
don't
know
have
who's
heroes
next on the list, I don't know what more there is to add to the conversation just yet. Allison, any thoughts?
Well, I mean, tons of them. Obviously, like, tons of them. I think the important thing is that if you care about, like, justice and equality and, like, basic health and safety and the right of people to be happy, just make sure that when a name that comes out is somebody you love, you don't immediately start trying to find ways to justify their behavior, because that's been a very disappointing thing to watch have happen over the last couple of weeks and this morning in particular. It's been, yeah, like, just remember that there's a person, and like, your love of my specific love of Parks and Recreation doesn't win out over the suffering of other people,
especially since he's not even the best part of Parks and Recreation.
That is absolutely true. But you know what, let me say this too, and this is not aimed at you guys, this is like the kind of thing you want to talk about and I like talking to you all. Another thing I would say is, if you have women in your life who work, particularly if they work in entertainment or in entertainment media, don't constantly ask them what they think about all of this stuff, because everyone they know is constantly asking them what they think about all this stuff.
Well,
and like,
I'm
this
just
is gonna
just, edit
like,
out everything you said.
No. This is great. Like, this is the right kind of conversation to have, but inevitably, like, if I'm having a conversation, even with just a stranger, and they ask what I do, and I say, oh, I write about film and television, then they'll go, oh, what do you think about all this stuff with James Franco? And I'm like, oh, all right, we're going to talk about this? Cool. I thought maybe we were going to talk about Phantom Thread, but no? All right. That's cool.
Yeah. My particular brand of, like, I guess, male privilege in this whole thing is that people find out I'm a movie critic, and then they just ask me what's good that's out.
Yeah.
That's generally what happens to me as well.
Yeah.
So unless they're like, a lift driver. Always...
Brian, what do you think about the fact that all these men suck? Like, that's crazy, right? You're a man. But no, it's just like, so is Paddington good? And I'm like, probably.
Well, it's like...
It's got a bear.
Like at the Golden Globes this last week, there were some very moving and inspiring moments. There was one of the sickest burns in the history of sick burns. All really great stuff. But then, like, all that the men had to do was wear little buttons that said time's up and call it a day, and didn't even really speak about it, you know? And that is really frustrating and upsetting. And there is something to be said for letting women speak on an issue that's centered on women. But there are all kinds of people who just don't want to hear it from, you know, mouthy broads. So, like, find a way to speak to maybe even two other men and not just ask women how they're doing. I have a thing I'm excited about, if we don't want to end on that, like, salty note that's movie-related, which is that I am so excited about this Starz TV show that they announced, spinning off of John Wick. Have you heard about this stuff?
Oh, yes.
The Continental, yeah. So, yeah. First of all, Lance Reddick is the lead or we riot. Like, that's going to be a real problem for me.
It has to be, right?
Right? Well,
like,
and
he's
got to
just basically be his character from The Wire again.
Pretty much. but in, like, nicer suits.
Oh, yeah.
And
well,
then...
Yeah.
Just the mind boggles, the possibility, like, I'm really hoping maybe it's an anthology series and every week is just another mini action movie. And then, of course, you know, Keanu is just going to show up one day and they're not even going to tease it. He's just going to arrive and it's going to
be
great.
Well, he is a producer, right?
Yeah, so, he's executive producer.
He's definitely involved in this.
Yes.
Yeah.
But is not attached to Star, which I think is great, because what I don't want is a John Wick TV series. What I do want is a TV series about the Continental. I'm so on board. I'm really excited.
My greatest hope for that television show, because like they set out the rules and it's like there's no business on Continental property. So I'd love it if the camera just never left the hotel and it was like a workplace comedy. But every now and then, like someone staggers in just like riddled with bullet holes and like walks up and Lance Reddick is there and he's just like, how may I help you, sir?
I sort of hope maybe
this is
it's at
Protocol
least partially,
5, right?
Totally.
We use bleach on this? Okay,
yeah.
Cool. All right.
I hope we spend time with the cleaning staff. I hope we spend time with the caterers. Like, I hope that whoever does room service, there are always just giant bags of ice at the ready because people are constantly having to pour themselves ice baths. I want to know about that bar. I want to know about, like,
I
all of
know
it.
How... I want to know how the bartenders file their taxes. Like, are they like, is this 1/15th?
Right?
Like, no, but like, is this 1/15th? Like, how do I break up this gold piece that he gave me? does this count for 20% or is this 30%?
That's
how do
even
I split
better
this
idea,
with the
Bill.
Back?
We need a, The Big Short, but revolving purely around the currency manipulation of the Continental. I do want... I don't remember the actress's name, but I want more of the bartender from the first movie who had the kind of Betty Page style haircut.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, I know who you're talking about now. And they kind of wrapped her character kind of into the telecommunication people towards the second film, right? They kind of raveled her character or her look basically and kind of stylized it with all the
Switchboard operators.
The switchboard, yes, switchboard operators.
I want more of the tailor too. I guess he's outside of the hotel, but
is it going to be the New York hotel or is it going to be like all the hotels?
Yeah, that's the question.
So like, are we going to have the sommelier?
Do they each have a tailor and a sommelier? Yeah.
See, this is why I'm excited about the show. There are so many possibilities. And usually you see like, oh, now this is appropriate for this conversation. Oh, now there's a TV series of Taken. And you're like, great, okay. Mm-hmm. I already watched the movie. Yeah. So this is going to be Taken with less swearing and less blood. I'm really excited. That's great. Oh, Lethal Weapon. That's great. Lethal Weapon, but nobody swears. This is going to be so fun. Actually, no Mel Gibson, so maybe better. But like, it's so dull. So the idea that what they're spinning off is this one very interesting thing that opens up these doors to all kinds of other stories that I'm stoked about. It's going to be something similar with whenever the Kingkiller Chronicles series happens, because when the author behind those books signed his deal, it was for a film series and a television series and a video game. Or video games, maybe, with the understanding that they're all going to exist in this universe, which presumably it's like the deal that HBO wishes it had signed with George R. R. Martin. But it's what the Kingkiller series is going to be is something that's not what's in the books. It's going to be universe adjacent. So
let me ask this, though. I'm sure something else that HBO wished they signed with George R. R. Martin was a contractual obligation to finish the fucking books.
Well, they don't get any money off the books. They could give a shit.
Does Kingkiller... does Kingkiller actually have an ending yet, or is he or she?
He, done? Patrick Rothfuss, yeah. No, a planned trilogy.
Because that's the name of the wind, right?
Yes, yeah. So it's a planned trilogy.
The
third
one's
not out yet. I'm hoping sometime this year, but who the hell knows? But those books are so long and so meaty that I find it, there's just no way that two movies will come out before the third book does. But the world building is so good that, like, the world already exists and they can just start playing around in it. I don't think we're going to have a George R. R. Martin problem.
Well, I'm fingers super excited crossed for the Watchmen series, and I know that I'm Me probably too. Alone on that.
No, I am too. Hmm. Please take another crack at that apple, because God, that movie was bad.
Yeah. Who's involved with that creatively?
As far as I know, that's Damon, my question. Damon Lindelof.
Okay.
Oh, yes.
Coming hot off The Leftovers,
no,
bro.
What? Come
I'm
on.
I'm on board.
Come on.
Yeah, me too.
Give me some Lost. Give me some Lost. Give me some Leftovers. I'm still into it.
All right. Well, we've somehow turned into a TV podcast briefly.
Sorry, that's totally my fault.
Speaking of which, The Good Place is still amazing.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, and that last episode. Same with Crazy Ex.
Yeah.
I haven't watched Crazy Ex Girlfriend yet. I got to.
I don't watch TV. I watched the Alabama Georgia game. Woo!
That was on TV. Fun. I guess that counts.
Yes.
I watched the whole series yesterday, which wasn't hard because it's like 14, 22 minute episodes of Enlisted, which had been on Fox a couple years ago. And I wanted to give a brief shout out because if you like Good Place, Parks and Rec, and all those shows, I think you and like Brooklyn Nine-Nine, I think you all would love Enlisted, which is on Amazon. So check it out.
Okay. I love Brooklyn Nine-Nine. So
me too.
All right, so let's get back to movies. Let's talk about let's talk about the movie we're here to talk about. That is The Commuter, the newest film from Yannick Holessera, who, if I say his name fast enough, it sounds like I know how to pronounce it. It stars Liam Neeson, Patrick Wilson, Sam Neill, and Vera Farmiga. And it is out in theaters now, and here I'm sorry.
Brian, for what it's worth, I think you're actually right, because he's Spanish.
No, he is.
So is it Jame?
It's Jame.
Okay,
no,
cool.
It's Jame.
Jame. Yeah. All right, I'm going to stop saying.
Wait, where is he from that the J becomes a...
Spanish. He's from Spain.
Isn't that like more of an H sound?
I don't know.
It's not an H. I can tell you that right now. I just listened to a podcast where he was introduced and the guy said his first name. He said his whole name like three or four times throughout like a 20-minute podcast, which I was kind of surprised by. I was like, oh boy, this guy's really kind of putting in the work. Like, I know how to say your name. I'm going to even repeat it four more times so you can correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I've got the last name right. It's the Jame or Jame or anything.
Jame.
Okay.
Jame.
Jaman.
Oh boy.
JCS coming at you with a fresh new track. The Commuter, starring Liam Neeson. Here is the trailer.
Most of us ride this train every day. We nod, we say hello. But how much do we really know about each other?
It's my first time on a commuter train.
I'm sorry, have we met?
No, I'm Joanna.
Michael.
What if I asked you to do something that could profoundly affect an individual on this train?
I don't understand.
It's just one little thing. Someone on this train does not belong. All you have to do is find them.
Why would I do it?
In the bathroom, there are $75,000. That money is yours if you do this one little thing.
All right, so that is the trailer for The Commuter, which does a pretty good job of laying out the entire premise of the movie. Liam Neeson is a man who takes the commuter train home every week from Manhattan, or every week, every day from Manhattan, and he is offered by a mysterious woman $100,000 if he just finds the one person on the train who does not belong. What will happen to that person, why they're looking for that person, who these people even are all a mystery that he hopes to unravel before something tragic happens. This is from the same director as The Shallows, Nonstop, Run All Night, and many other fine genre exercises.
Orphan.
I'm sorry, what?
Orphan.
Orphan, Unknown, apparently one of the Goal movies, which I don't think we realized, the House of Wax remake.
Dan Mecca is a super fan, apparently.
Yeah.
There's more than one Goal movie?
There's like three of them.
Oh, Jesus.
There's
Why?
Like Goal, The Dream Begins, like Goal, The Dream Continues, and then... Let me look this up.
The
Goal,
Dream
The Dream
ends.
Begins, Goal 2, Living the Dream, and then Goal 3, which apparently doesn't have a dream-related subtitle. It is also
three
weird
Goal,
to know,
Three Furious?
That's probably.
Oh, boy.
The first goal has an exclamation point. Goal two does not, but goal three does.
You got to earn that exclamation point.
Because it's goal, exclamation point, the dream begins. Goal two, colon, living the dream. Goal, exclamation point, three.
Wow.
Anyway, this is the commuter trying to once again get us back to the movie we're supposed to be talking about. Let's see what we all thought. If everyone who goes, give us a brief rundown of your thoughts on Colasera's previous film. And then give us your thoughts on the commuter. That would be great. So let's start with our guest, Allison. What did you think of the commuter?
Are you
on board? Oh, yeah.
I feel sort of like... my relationship to the commuter is almost as though I'm on board, but I'm sort of dangling by my bare hands and maybe about to be ripped off by the bag that got caught on a nail. Like, that's kind of where I'm at with the commuter. It cannot be denied that I had a really good time. I'm not sure that some of the good time I was having was intended by the movie. But I had a really good time. So, that's kind of the short version. I liked all four of the movies that this movie was to different varying degrees.
All right. And what did you think of his previous films, like The Shallows, Nonstop?
The Shallows is the only one I've seen, which I really like. Yeah. I saw this with a friend.
Are you on team Light That Shark on Fire?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
I saw this with a friend last night, Caroline Sita, who's another AV Club TV critic, among other things. Great writer, finder. But she, as we were walking out, she was like, man, I would have liked that a lot more if it wasn't just a not as good Nonstop. So now I have to see Nonstop. So,
yeah, I get, you know, that actually kind of plays in. I would say that I like this movie slightly less than Nonstop, but it's still a very good movie. I will agree.
Did we just get a willing Brian sandwich?
Just because I wanted to bring up Nonstop and it felt like it was okay. Also, I haven't given it's like a taste.
That was a teaser?
Yeah, I'll give my full thoughts at the end after everyone else is gone, as is standard, Michael.
What did I do?
Obviously, some enmity from our Call Me By Your Name episode still remains. Michael Snydell, why don't you tell us your thoughts?
And it's a peach, you son of a bitch.
On JCS. And then give us your thoughts on the TV.
I'm probably a JCS stan at this point.
I still don't know what that means.
I'm a big fan of almost everything. I'm a big fan of everything I've seen from him.
What does that stand for?
It's from the Eminem song.
Yeah.
So
it's just like it's obsessive in the case of the song, but it's a big fan.
If JCS doesn't return Michael Snydell's letter soon, Michael will kill his girlfriend and then drive his car off of a bridge. That's what Stan means.
Oh, that's that music video or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay,
the Eminem song that has aged just perfectly. I'm a big fan of JCS, though. I admittedly have not seen most of the Liam Neeson vehicles he's done, like Ron All Night. And
so you've seen
Unknown.
Goal 2?
I'm sorry? I have not seen Goal 2. I've seen The Shallows, House of Wax. The Shallows, House of Wax, Orphan, The Commuter, and Nonstop. And I guess this is a controversial opinion, but I don't like Nonstop that much.
Whoa.
I probably like this more than Nonstop I guess I don't really have time to get into it. I didn't like the camera work in it. I think Nonstop's really clever. I think there's a lot of good stuff in it, but I really like the camera work in this a lot more. This reminded me kind of what I want from Nonstop. I really liked The Commuter. I had a really good time with this movie. I had a good time watching it, and I had a great audience member who was two seats down from me, who was with, his wife or his partner, whoever, and he was literally hovering above the seat. Like, he was so tense watching this movie. Like, it was kind of as amazing to watch him as watch the actual movie. Yeah, I thought this was incredibly entertaining. And what I'll say before we like get into actual things is I just think this director, I think he's just a superb craftsman. I think that his narratives get a little bit convoluted at the end, but I'm always impressed that his stories, everything you need to know is on screen and is, I think he just has such a perfect balance of how much time to spend with people, how much, or, you know, what he needs to mention, like just the combination of economy that he finds and also like visceral thrills is, I think he's one of the best action directors we have at the moment.
All right. Excellent. Bill Graham, what about yourself? You've talked about at least The Shallows on this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on his other films and The Commuter?
So I think my history with him is basically Unknown Look Terrible. That's the one with the lady from Mad Men, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. January Jones.
Yeah. And yes, Diane Kruger, I believe.
Oh, Jesus. Two blondes in one movie? Too much. What? That's a joke. That is a joke. That is
someone likes Hitchcock just a little bit.
Okay. So I never saw that movie because it looked terrible. Nonstop looked like a lot of fun, and I never got around to seeing it. I saw Run All Night, which was delightful and a lot of fun, and the camera work, if you're into that, Mike, is definitely really, really good. There's a couple of sequences like in the middle of that film that are really fantastic, like conceptually. Of course, a lot of that stuff is kind of done with CGI, but you know, it works. And then I saw Shallows, and I'm definitely on team like that Shark on Fire. I wanted to like Shallows more than I actually did, but just the same, still satisfying in a lot of ways. And this film, I feel like the opening sequence almost overshadows the entire rest of the film. And that is not a detriment to the rest of the film. That is just how good that opening sequence really is. I feel like this filmmaker really takes a budget and stretches it. At times, you can see the seams, especially when you get into heavy CGI stuff. A little background, they actually only had one train car to actually film this entire film on, so they had to do a lot of out-of-sequence shooting. And the idea that they filmed this entire thing with one train car absolutely blows my mind. It looks really, really good as far as that is concerned. You never once kind of question how many train cars are on this thing. I mean, ultimately, I guess there's six, but yeah. Anyways, getting bogged down into details. I enjoyed this film a lot. I think the fight sequences are a little much. We are dealing with a 60-year-old actor who, or actually, I think he might be 65. He is old, which is surprising because he moves really well in this film, but his fight sequences last a little bit long, I would say, but they're still satisfying ultimately. I think this is another film that just doesn't quite know how or when to wrap up, how long to spend kind of wrapping up these loose threads. I feel like he needs just a final little tweak on a lot of the end of these movies, but just the same, it is very satisfying. We don't get very many films in this kind of category. I think it was termed that they're like mid-budget thrillers, which is $20, $30, $40 million thrillers. And they're high concept, and they're a lot of fun if you kind of give in to them. And so I definitely gave into it, and I had a lot of fun with it.
So for me, I saw House of Wax. I was drunk. I don't think that I can make a proper assessment of it, but I remember clapping and laughing a lot, which I think was the point during the points that I was doing it. Who knows? I did see Unknown, despite thinking that it looked really dumb, because my girlfriend at the time's father wanted to see it. And I was like, yeah, that makes sense. This seems like kind of a dad movie. But I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the hell out of it. And then I loved Nonstop. I thought Run All Night was great. And The Shallows, I think it made my top 10 of the year list that year.
Woo!
I can't remember, but I know that it should have, because it was really good and really amazing. I will say that Nonstop is one of my most quoted movies, which is a bizarre thing to say, but I'll talk more about why later. And so The Commuter, I'm obviously excited for, and I think it delivers. I think it delivers everything you could want out of a movie with this particular plot.
Set of skills.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. the both Liam Neeson and Yamek Kolesera are operating with that particular set of skills that they both have at the top of their game, and it's a super solid movie. It reminds me of the movies that like I used to really look forward to back before everything became either a massive budget and superheroes or, you know, a super low budget and just sad people. So I think, especially coming off of last week's selection and then episode, I'm just super glad that like we kind of get a palate cleanser, and this is like the perfect movie to
a nice little peach.
Yeah, it's just a peach of a movie to like get you over your Oscar blues, you know, over the awards season hump, where it's like, I understand that Three Billboards is good. I understand that Call Me By Your Name is a critical darling. Like, I understand. But, like, wouldn't it be cool to just have Liam Neeson just beat the shit out of some people on a train? And this movie gets
it. With a guitar.
And it delivers. and I really liked it. So I would say, like, this is a solid B movie that lives in the B to A range of a grade.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go over some things. Let's talk about it, and then we can get into spoilers.
So we're going to talk for an hour about that opening, is what you say?
Yeah. So this is, I mean, when people hear critics talk about Yamek Kolesera, their eyes might glaze a little bit, because like, I think to the not uninformed or unknowledgeable observer, but to the layman, you might look at a movie like this and say, he's not really doing anything extraordinary. But I think that that's kind of the space that he lives in. He's mm-hmm. not doing anything too showy. Everything that he does that's so good is happening like on a subliminal level. You know, he's not just slapping a camera down and showing you some stuff. And he's not, you know, just running through what the usual beats of this would be. He's doing something like that opening scene where we basically get like a full year in the life of this man. It doesn't even like clue you in on it so much. Like there's the little things, obviously the radio and then the mm-hmm. weather, and you see the pumpkins around Halloween. And it's just like with an opening like that, you just know that the movie is being created with care. Like, am I alone in feeling like that? Like, that opening alone set me at ease.
Yeah, I think that opening...
I was going to say, it sounded like Allison was about to jump in.
Oh, I wasn't, but I do agree. I think that opening sequence is a real winner. The section that particularly connected with me is when he's able to juxtapose all of these so quickly, pleasant commutes to sort of tense commutes to the one where they're having the giant fight and then they're flashing the wedding rings at each other. Like that, it mm-hmm. just felt, it was able to give us an impression of a complicated, lived in marriage without spending actually all that much time on it. Because man, poor Lady Cora, she's really not in this movie very much, but
that's who it was. Oh yeah. My God. I was racking my brain with why do I recognize her? And why do I recognize her like soothing somebody? Like I recognize that tone. And I was just like, who is that? Why is that person familiar? Okay. Thank you so much.
Yeah. She was using her "Oh, poor Edith" voice at the end of the movie there. Elizabeth McGovern is really good. And in the scenes she's really good. There's just not much of her, but we to be honest, don't actually need that much, because you get such a clear sense of the strength of this marriage without it being idealized or ludicrously mm-hmm. rosy because of that this opening sequence.
Yeah, this might be the healthiest marriage that we've ever seen in a movie that deals with an ex-cop trying to stop something from happening. Like, you know, they have their ups, they have their downs, but at the end of the day, when he goes on that train, they, you know, they turn around, they show each other their wedding rings, and they're just in love, and the love will see them yep. through, And, you know, he's uncertain how to tell her that he's lost his job. And his friend's like, man, I know you. You're going to tell her. It's going to be fine. You'll make it through. And it's just, it really is weird. And another thing that I kind of love is that he's an ex-cop who also appears to be super good at his new job.
Yeah.
Like, usually in this type of movie, you'd get the sort of Incredibles thing where he's like obviously dissatisfied and he's like, God, I just wish I could flash a badge and chase down a bad guy. But he's like walking through the office, making small talk, making deals.
But they give him like a reason for that, right? And this film kind of, I think, as much as anything else, touches on like our current, dissatisfaction with like how our economy runs and how, you know, the big guys are always going to stay big and, you know, the Goldman Sachs of the world and things like that. And so I think we get a little bit of why he would be, you know, he even says it like the reason he cares so much about this particular position is because he lives it, right? Like he and his family went through that kind of situation. So he wants to make sure that nobody else has that kind of future befall them, right? So it makes sense. Like they do a good job of basically setting that up. They have fights over money or arguments over money, and they have arguments over, you know, just all sorts of stuff that a lot of people in day-to-day jobs, 9-to-5 jobs, stress and worry about.
Bill, I kind of want to speak to that a little bit because I was curious how the rest of you kind of reacted to his tonal arc, because it is kind of I do agree with you that I think it does a really interesting job in kind of establishing his dissatisfaction and then also, oh hey, he's used to be a cop, but like I think there is something a little bit murky there in terms of like not necessarily politically, but I literally mean in terms of his character arc. I don't quite know what the movie was exactly trying to say about him being a character who feels ground under doing the right thing, because that thing seems to kind of keep mutating, and I'm not sure that theme is as coherent as the movie would like to think it is.
In what way? Like,
Are you talking about the challenge? Yeah, you're trying to talk around it, but I mean, you're kind of talking about his reaction to the challenge, right?
I'm talking about his reaction to the challenge. I'm talking to the way that this at first seems to be about the everyman, but then seems to be about cops. Like, there is just something. Sorry, I've been thinking about this since last night, and I'm not sure quite how to articulate it, but there's just something about his character that feels a little bit like a missed opportunity to me in terms of how they first want him to be this everyman, this commuter, this person who is on the train every day, but then also want him to use these special skills as a policeman. And I think some of that stuff hits a lot more interestingly at the beginning, like in terms of his ease in being able to talk to anyone. But then also him being an action hero. And for whatever reason, those two, dualities were like, I don't know, a little incoherent to me by the end. And I think that does speak to an overall messiness in the third act. But I just wondered, specifically related to what Bill was talking about, whether you guys had and a reaction to how his character kind of keeps shifting.
Yeah, this is one of the things that bugged me, because I think the movie tells us that what he is a good man. Like, it poses this question, there are 16 kinds of people, what kind of a person are you? Are you a person who takes the money or doesn't, basically? And he takes the money, and then I think the journey we're supposed to go on is him realizing that he's actually not a person who takes the money, that he can't do it, but he does, and right? He does take the money, and he can't kill well, okay, so he can't, that's spoilers, but he can't do this one specific action, but he can do another, right? Like, he's okay with identifying some people and not others. He's okay with one end and not another end, even if he's conflicted. And it's just, it doesn't seem actually interested in answering those questions. It does seem interested in, like, tying a bow on it at the end and calling it a day, and I just didn't find that remotely satisfying.
If I can jump in, I think that things in the movie escalate too much for the battle for Michael McCulley's soul to play as well as it's supposed to. Because
he gets
the money, and then he gets.
Well, hold on. Let me ask a question, and then I'll let you go back, Brian, because I want to get input. Because based on that trailer, I wasn't quite understanding what is going on. Because I thought $25,000 is
The trailer cuts it wrong.
Okay, the $25,000 is his first initial yes to this, and the $75,000 is supposed to be waiting for him at the end, right?
Yes.
So he's taking money to basically say, like, I will do this task, but he's not actually committed to doing that task with just that $25,000.
Well, no, at least like a retainer,
initially he thinks. Yes. At least he initially thinks, oh, I can walk away with this. And it's like, no, sir. No, you cannot.
Yeah, because the woman comes on the train and says, are we doing this? And he's like, no. And they're like, well, you already took the money. Sucks. And, you know, we knew that you might try to just take the money and run. So, by the way, here's your wife's wedding ring. So I think that that's a little bit of the problem. I think that, like, they put the family in jeopardy too soon. I think it might have been interesting if they'd given him a few more stops, since this train is not nonstop. There are actually many stops.
We're diverging into spoilers at this point.
Well, yeah, I don't know what counts as a spoiler.
Are we not in spoilers?
Let's, Michael, is that going to be your new catchphrase?
No, I thought we were spoilers. Whoops.
Okay. It is his new catchphrase.
Sorry, let's get into spoilers.
Yes.
Which is now my new catchphrase. So spoilers for nonstop. Spoilers for stop. The commuter.
Unstoppable?
Boy.
This could be called stops. There are many stops in this movie. And it can be unstoppable and
six
nonstop.
Six stops?
Yeah. I think it's seven, because zone seven is Cold Spring. Okay. Anyway. So
gotcha.
When he takes the 25,000, and a woman comes onto the train for, like, just the amount of time the doors are open, is like, hey, are we doing this? And he's like, no, I'm not. This is crazy. And she says, well, they know you took the money, and here's an incentive for you to get to work. And it's his wife's wedding ring. And so they're still underground at this point. If you ever meet a New York film critic, ask them how they feel about the fact that the commuter north is underground for so long in this movie, and they will talk your goddamn ear off about it. And so he's trying to make a phone call. He calls his friend. He's like, hey, check out my house. I need to make sure my wife's okay. And he starts doing it. So the problem is with this whole, the morality of the common man, the thing that it's playing at, is that almost immediately, it's not a battle for his soul. It's a battle to save his family, which I think it might have played more interesting if it had taken up until the point that the FBI agent is killed for him to, like, really have the turn, like, you know, because he puts that tracker on that guy and still seems shocked by the murder. And
yes,
and I just feel like, well, at that point, if people are threatening your family, like, you should assume that they're gonna murder someone.
Sure. Right? Yeah, I think murdering Mike at the beginning is kind of enough to kind of get him on board. I think that should have been the initial thing instead of the wedding ring. I think that is kind of one of those things where it's like, okay, look, we're not messing around. And then he starts to become worried about his family, because obviously if they'll just murder Mike in the open like that, and of course, you know, I'm saying Mike, and if you don't know who Mike is, sorry, Breaking Bad,
it's Jonathan
remember
Banks,
his name.
The cranky old man. And you know what, Bill, hilariously, his name in this movie is Walt.
Walt, yes. Okay. Yeah,
so
I noticed that too.
The thing is, they wouldn't have to kill Walt, played by Jonathan Banks, if Liam Neeson didn't tell him to call the cops, and Liam Neeson wouldn't have a reason to tell him to call the cops if they haven't threatened his wife. So, like, them pulling out their token, like their you better fucking do this card, is really like, it happens way too early, I think, for me. I think that it would have been more interesting if he had found the dead FBI guy and was like, oh my God. And then they called him and said, you know, what the hell did you think was going to happen? He's like, well, I didn't think this was going to happen. They're like, well, that's why you did it, because you didn't have to think about it. Blah, blah, blah. Psychology, button. And now you have to do it again because you got the wrong person.
Brad, I think the script is stacking the deck when it doesn't need to. Like, that's how I kind of look at it.
I think that the script wants us to be on Michael McCauley's side. And I guess for some reason, like, man desperate to pay for his son's college and his family's life doesn't seem like enough of an incentive for him to do something that might be morally compromised. I think that they want us to have him back at 100% hero rather than like 75% hero, possibly 25% villain, like way too early.
Here's my thing. I never for a moment thought to myself, I wonder if I would take that money, like, ever. And I think the only way that the tension of that moment and that scene between the two of them, that like first scene with Vera and Liam Neeson, is great, like really compelling, interesting. Mm-hmm. You can understand why that would be something that he would consider. But it's also just creepy and weird enough that at a certain point you'd have to be like, no, this is really bad. Especially somebody who used to be a cop. You go, you find this $25,000 in the bathroom, and do you take it? No, of course you don't. That's like, no. Like, nobody would. You're just like, oh, you know, all I have to do, I mean,
and
God,
at least
maybe
you
I'm being
wash
naive,
your hands afterwards?
Yes.
What?
Like, why?
Just in the bathroom.
Yeah, the,
like,
the,
someone
the water
knows
on those
everything
is probably
about
really
you.
Dirty, Bill.
Oh, okay. I don't think about that. I don't think about where is this water coming from.
Allison.
Oh, it's I couldn't hear
the rest of Allison's thought.
It's okay. I think it's a really interesting premise that then doesn't get followed through in a way that's compelling. And some of that is that this movie tonally is so all over the place. Sometimes it's this, like, you know, philosophically engaging thriller where we think about, like, the nature of goodness, right? And then sometimes it's the quippy train conductor or trying to hit on the traumatized nurse. And then, like, sometimes it's campy. There's no way that fight scene with the guitar, which is so fun, which I had the best time watching. There's no way that that's not supposed to be just a little bit campy. But then there are other moments that are obviously meant to be something. It's just totally all over the place. It's like they had a pitch meeting. Right? Somebody is like getting his elevator pitch in. One of the three people who worked on the screenplay is getting their pitch in. They're like, okay, so it's like Die Hard meets Taken, but if Die Hard was also Murder on the Orient Express, and if Taken was also Speed, right? Like, when we get to the point where it's like, this train is going 70 miles an hour, when it goes around that corner, it's going to derail. I was like, oh, great. So are we going to jump the expressway now? That's what's happening, right? Like, now we're in Speed. Is there a Sandra Bullock? I guess it's the poor conductor who dies, and then they say everyone survived, and Liam Neeson is the hero, and this conductor died, and no one ever talks about it.
I was talking about the hostages surviving.
That is true. That makes sense. And obviously, the FBI agent also died. But by the time we get to the end, they didn't even try to
rescue that guy. Like, they didn't. Like, I get it. Like, he looks a little bloody and he looks a little dead. But like, maybe open that door a little bit more and push on him and be like, "Yo, man, you okay?
I'm not even talking about the engineer. I'm talking about the conductor who helps Conductor Sam. I think is what he's billed. No, the so
right near the end.
Yeah,
the
when
guy
they're
who
pulling
dies
apart
in the explosion, and then there's the guy who has the bag check with the angry nurse.
Gotcha.
When he says, between the people and the train, I always knew it was gonna be the train because somebody thought there needed to be another quip there, right? Like it doesn't like from a completely different movie.
Commissioner Loeb from the Batman films.
You don't
Yes.
It's just, it's so all over the place, and that makes for a very entertaining ride, but oh my God, it was like, maybe this is the intended experience. Maybe I'm supposed to feel like there's whiplash, and like I'm on a train car that perhaps is going 70 miles an hour, and when it goes around the curve, it's going to derail, so I have to brace myself on the table in the train car.
I agree with you. This, like Nonstop, this movie constantly made me think, like, what must the passengers be thinking right now? Because, and just as a Nonstop, like, the movie spends primarily all its time with Liam Neeson, but, like, he's acting so erratically that I and Nonstop, I think, dealt with that a lot more than this movie did. And, in fact, one of my as I was walking out of the theater with my wife, I told her, I was like, there's that scene towards the end of Nonstop when Scoot has the gun on Liam Neeson, and Liam Neeson has to, like, rally the people around him after they've seen all these news reports. And, like, I think for me, it's a minute long, and I'm going to play it now. Like, this is the type of thing that, like, elevates Nonstop above this movie, because I think that this is the point at which Nonstop really, like, buckles down and like commits to its tonal disparity and its nonsense. So here is that scene.
Passenger on board this flight has threatened to kill someone every 20 minutes unless they're paid $150 million, and now 3 people are dead. The bomb will explode in less than half an hour. Now, they want you to believe that I'm responsible. Everything you've heard about me is true. I've lost my family, my job. I'm an alcoholic. My daughter was diagnosed with acute leukemia at the age of 5, and I spent my days at work instead of being at home looking after her, because I was afraid of watching her die. I'm not a good father. I'm not a good man. I'm hijacking this plane. I'm trying to save it.
And that, I think, is like what this movie... First of all, I just wanted an excuse to play that because I love hearing it. And that is the thing that I quote most often in my daily life, is just any time that I'm attempting to get something done, I say, I'm not a good father, I'm not a good man, but I'm not trying to hijack this plane. I'm trying to save it. Just like putting it all out there. I just want to get this one thing done. But yeah, I think that like in Nonstop, that is the moment where like the movie takes a break and says, yes, this is ridiculous. Yes, there's so much plot that's in the background, but like, let's just distill it down to its most basic element. And I think that they sort of do that towards the end of this movie, once the train has derailed and suddenly it turns into The Negotiator. Another film that meets, what was it, Speed and Taken and Die Hard. But I just feel like it wasn't enough. Like they didn't sell the animosity between him and the other passengers enough at that point for his moment with Prin and everything else to like really sell their sudden cohesiveness as a unit.
I think the weird thing too about The Commuter is that for a little while it really does lean into that like, this is my duty idea, like like this very like Hawksian, Howard Hawksian thing. And from what I remember, Nonstop is like less that. Like it is, there are far more like goofy scenes, or like, as you're saying, Brian, like Nonstop is more consistently goofy, and this is more like it's like sections feel more down to earth, and then other sections are totally ridiculous.
Yeah.
So I think that's almost what it is that like, this is a lot more scattered beyond, and also a little more incoherent in that same way.
I want to mention something that I was listening to Sarah mention, and that's JCS, not another Sarah. It's it's interesting because he mentioned one of the reasons that he liked the idea of the train cars was because it was segmented, so we could have something really ridiculous happen on one side of the train that wouldn't affect passengers on the other. Versus nonstop, there's like a curtain that separates, but like you can still very obviously like hear or, you know, hear commotion going on. And so, you know, the train is making a lot of noise, and so, you know, if something happens, and they have very specific sections. It's interesting. This film does a good job of, like, showing you, like, oh, this is the train car where all the power is off and nobody wants to be there, so nobody's there. This is the train car where this person is. This is the end of the train where the guy is playing poker or Texas No Hold'em. And, you know, blah, 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 blah. So they're able to kind of segment it where this little fight scene happens early on with the FBI agent where you're like, this is fucking ridiculous. This is happening and nobody's like, and then you kind of see they zoom out and they're like, yeah, nobody's really recognizing that this is happening right now because it's in between train cars and there's nobody on either side. So,
it's like nonstop if there was a better door on the airplane. Which is, I like that, but that is like the one wrinkle that allows the movie to be different enough. But like, again, yes. I just have this concept of like, and they kind of show it, like he will walk through a train car and then come back 15 minutes later with like glass in his face and his knuckles bloody, and people are just like, I wonder what he was up to.
Like
he looks like he was under the train.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it goes overboard here and there for sure.
Yeah, a little bit. Just a wee bit. I will say though that I did like, and I don't know how much of it is just I was on board again for this movie. But at the end when everyone did their little I am Spartacus moment, I'm still surprised that worked so well for me, because I could see it coming, and it didn't. Like I said, they weren't as cohesive a unit as in Nonstop, but like in that moment, I was like, yeah, Spartacus.
And even the quip's decent. The quip from the like creepy conductor.
Yeah, I'm not.
Yeah.
Here's the other thing. Like, what? I sort of love how this movie is deeply uninterested in the motivating conspiracy.
Yes.
Like, I would defy anyone to tell me.
Is it tax evasion?
Literally no idea.
City planning?
We have no clue.
There is a city planner
no clue. Who
has some information or is going to do something. His cousin witnesses his murder by the cops because the cops know that the city planner is going to turn on them. But, like, I just was thinking, I'm like, what could a city planner know that would require this level of nonsense? Like, why is this the thing? Like, I just had this concept of it, like, it goes all the way to Washington. But it really did seem like, no, it was just the NYPD and, like... But like, what could the city planner have known? Like, were they just building outside of code? One police tower is not earthquake ready. Oh man, that's going to cost us a lot of money. Let's just murder this.
The ADA is going to be real pissed at them. They're going to realize that ramp, it ain't going to work. It's not going to meet code.
And the movie is just
too angled.
The movie is so. I think the movie is smart enough to know, like, that it doesn't really matter, that's not the story it's telling. Yeah. And then to the point that
we spent an hour and a half to get you here. Like, you don't need to worry about it.
To the point that, like, whenever they mention the conspiracy, they just call it the conspiracy. Like, even Vera Farmiga is like, you don't know who I'm working for. Like, there's a conspiracy. And he's like, I don't give a damn. I'm not killing this person. And then the newscasters at the end are like, exposing a conspiracy that involved New York. And it's like, it's like when you're on Twitter, this is a very insidery joke, but it's like when you're on Twitter and people are like, isn't it great how some people can write an article that has like no facts but still gets out there? It's like, I love how like uninformed opinions get passed off as blah blah blah, and it's like, okay, like who wrote what? Like, guys, come on, someone give me some concrete details so I can at least know what the hell's going on.
It's a conspiracy. That's all you need to know.
It's a conspiracy. Look, conspiracies are never good.
It reminds me of Alex Billington's like blow up at the Online Film Critics Society a couple of weeks ago or whatever.
You know,
and
what?
He was just like, it's crumbling down. It's crumbling down. It's terrible. And you were like point blank, like, Alex, seriously, like,
what is the conspiracy?
What are you talking about? And he's just like, you know, you're just denying it. And it's just like, oh, Jesus. Okay.
That is a weirdly apt analogy that none of our listeners will get.
Guys, speaking of how smart this movie is, I just want to point out there's a character named Jewel Skateboarder.
Yep.
Wait, is there really a character
named
Jewel Skateboarder?
Oh, yeah. It's Letitia Wright, who is the young woman who comes like on,
has the,
comes on
the
train. No, comes on the train on the second stop to give him the wedding ring.
No, the woman with the nose ring is Florence Pugh, isn't it?
Yeah, from Lady Macbeth. Yeah.
Gwen.
I have no idea what you're talking about right now.
Gwen is the one. Gwen, who's played by Florence Pugh, is the one who has the backpack full of license.
Yeah. But you're saying names, and I know who the characters you're talking about, but you're saying like, oh yeah, they're from blah blah blah. I'm like, what? Huh? Who?
Florence Pugh. It's Lady Macbeth is the one where the photo they always show is her sitting on a couch in a beautiful blue dress. Came out this year.
That's it is a movie from last year.
I didn't see it. Yeah.
She's very good. Can we talk about the fact that very conveniently all seven, or I guess six, of the day riders who are going to Coldwater Creek or whatever the hell it is. I think that's
Cold
a store.
Spring.
Cold Spring. Coldwater Creek is a
details
store
matter.
For art teachers. For art teachers who want linen blouses. Anyway, can we talk about how convenient it is that all six of them have bags and are behaving suspiciously? It's very convenient. Like, all of them have bags and are like kind of fidgety and weird. And I get that commuting is tense, but don't you think as a former police officer that at least one of them you would have been like, oh, no way, that's just a person.
Here's my deal, okay? So you're on public transportation. You know, this isn't an airplane, but there's definitely a certain sense of, oh, if a conductor or a person of authority comes by and it's like, hey, I need to peek inside your bag real quick, we're doing a random check, you wouldn't blow the fuck up at that person. You'd be like, okay, you know, I'm kind of prepared for this because it is public transport and I live in fucking New York City where, you know, 9/11 happened and all this other shit. So it's just like, oh, yeah. You know, like, you want to take a peek in my bag? Sure. Cool. You know, like, you go to any sporting event or anything like that where there's, like, a lot of security, and there is security at Subways. Like, maybe not this much, but there was also, like, a random bag check before they even got on the fucking train. So, you know, like, maybe just chill the fuck out. I don't know.
I have another logic question. I have one more logic question.
Lay it on us.
All right. So, as best I understand it, the idea put forth by the fucking FBI is that this incredibly vulnerable witness should board a commuter train by herself to meet the FBI agents in a suburb outside the city. This is the plan.
So, yeah,
not that she should just, like, hide in a hallway until they can send an SUV or, like, or any other thing. That she should go – anything. But no, she should get on a commuter train and go to a suburb to meet the FBI agents in the suburb.
There is in New York City an FBI field office just outside of Tribeca. Could she not have gone there?
Sure.
I don't know.
Is the FBI agent on the train not like completely unrelated? Was she supposed to watch after her?
So here's the thing. I think I may have a vague answer to this.
Brian's got answers, guys.
Maybe. Because you see when Liam Neeson is getting on the train and they're like, oh, random bag checks today. And his friend's like, man, during rush hour. And there's a guy who looks sketchy and then walks away.
Yes, with the snake tattoo. Yep.
No. That's a different guy. There's a guy at the first place who looks kind of sketchy and he's like, yeah, it's not going to work. Like, I'm not getting on this one. And maybe it is the snake tattoo guy and he gets on at a different stop. But like, he's definitely supposed to be shadowing, I think, this girl.
Yeah, it is that same guy. He has a snake tattoo. So it's confusing because the guy in the burly at the end who's playing Texas Hold'em, he also has like a tattoo on his neck. I don't know why they would do that. I think maybe they're trying to insinuate like maybe they're connected, and so you're like, ooh, like these two guys are like, you know, connected. But
I think that the girl didn't give her, she obviously didn't tell anyone who she was. She's like, my name is Prin, and I have information, and I don't trust no one. So maybe it's just like, I need to get out of the city because I know the cops are dirty and I can't trust the FBI. And so the FBI is like, all right, meet us outside the city and we'll protect you here because you won't be, you know, we won't have a 16 blocks situation. Classic Bruce Willis movie, 16 blocks. And so,
is there a way that you can contact the FBI?
Yeah, you fucking call them or email them.
Allison,
what were you going to say?
It's as I think was in the news this week. They're walk-in witnesses, right? Like you literally can just walk into the FBI,
yeah,
and be like, "Hey, by the way, I have some really important information about the Trump campaign in Russia," and then they're supposed to do something about that. By the way, didn't they also say there was a mole in the FBI? I have so many questions.
And I think that is what is up. I think that there is a mole in the FBI. And so the FBI
Wait, are we talking
like,
about real life right now?
No, we're back on the movie.
Okay. I'm making sure. I was like, you know, Trump's America. I won't put it past anybody now. Okay.
Look, is there probably a mole currently in the real world FBI? Yeah, let's just be real. There probably is. But in the movie, there is almost certainly a mole in the FBI because Liam Neeson says, wait, so you, like this agent is the only one who knew about it. So it is possible that the agent in the FBI like told people like, oh my God, there's a witness. You got to get going. Cause Murphy, Alex Murphy, played by Patrick Wilson, says that he knows about the FBI witness, but the FBI shouldn't have told anyone. And that's one of the clues that lets you know that Murph is a fucking traitor. And that and the fact that he uses the word noble, which the second that the girl says something about noble and then Liam Neeson's like, wait, he said noble. I was like, oh, shit, I have to wait for the person to say noble so I know who's going to get shot next, which is another great thing about this movie. And so I think I've become lost in my own attempt to unravel this conspiracy.
Yeah, I don't remember.
I don't quite know what's happening. I know that the FBI has a leak.
Like me throughout this, the middle of this movie, I was very confused.
The FBI has a leak. Prin is trying to get out of the city and speak to the good FBI, and what's the other thing? And I have no idea who Vera Farmiga works for. I think she's an independent contractor. I think she's just an independent contractor. In all honesty,
I'm double thinking what I just said. Yeah, you're right. That's what he's insinuating at the end is you're just a commuter like us. You know, you got pushed into this fold and, you know, whatever.
Oh no, she's like the one in charge. She's like what? Michael, were you about to say something?
No, you have all made me more confused than when we started.
But at the end of the day, like, all you need to know is that Liam Neeson is a good man.
He's a good action dad. That's all I need.
I'm so sorry, Michael. you were so like just kind of humming along, like, yeah, this is a fun movie, like it's entertaining. And now we have thoroughly fucked you up. You're just like, I don't know what's going on in this movie anymore.
Yeah, I mean it's confusing. I'm sure that but you know what? But the thing is, unlike another classically confusing action film,
Are you gonna bring up The Big Sleep? Okay, no. Oh God damn it.
unlike that.
No, fuck that movie. Jesus
unlike
Christ.
That, I always know that two things are true. That Liam Neeson is the good guy, and that at the end of the day, he will, like, you know, succeed. Like, there's just, sure. even with as confusing as this fucking conspiracy is, I think that, like, grounding it in a purely personal viewpoint for him helps to clarify, at the very least, who you want to succeed.
Can I say something? I'm really confused how they had, like, 16, 20 passengers on this train, and not a single one of them had anything more than a bumper scrape at the end. Just give a couple of them, like, a broken arm or a concussion
or
something.
Oh, wait. Are you talking about purely after the crash?
Yeah.
Because, like, Patrick Wilson stabs everyone.
No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about immediately after the crash. Like, he's like, is everybody okay? And everybody's, like, kind of nodding their head and kind of like, yeah. And then he's like, all right, I need you to put newspaper on the fucking windows. And everybody's like, okay, that's strange.
I'll
but,
be real, though.
You know,
that's fucking
okay.
clever as hell.
Yeah, but I was just like, I just want to see someone with, like a real bad broken leg and just be like, yeah, like, if we do some hostage shit, can you get me off first, please?
Bill, like, what Bill I'm a was priority. Looking for was an After Earth style compound fracture.
Oh, Jesus.
Can we just
Again,
also talk about...
I don't
about,
know why I'm citing such obscure movies for such dumb reasons,
know.
But...
Can we talk about how amazing that crash is and that the train never once rolls over?
Yeah, yes. Yeah. The train stays upright, which is surprising given everything else that happens. And the guy who Liam Neeson thought was the bad guy saved his life, which lets you know that sometimes the person that you think the least of will come through when you most need them.
Everything I love about that movie needs to be known in that part where he is like, where Liam Neeson is leaning out of the train car as the train car is like toppling over and seems like it might hit him. And then he moves. Like, that's everything. That's all I need.
That's such a specific threat in such a major moment. It's like, is it the fire or shrapnel? No, the train that has lifted itself into the air may graze this other train enough that it will kill me because I'm leaning out too much.
And then that train car would have been filled with Liam Neeson's head and the dead body of the poor forgotten conductor instead of just the poor forgotten conductor.
Allison, you are not going
to
let that conductor go.
I was about to say, you really
feel so bad for him.
Justice for the conductor.
Yeah, I mean, like, at the end when grumpy phone-playing guy is like, that guy, hero, so write it down, H-R-E-O. He couldn't have said, and also the conductor Sam, he was also a hero. He died, but he's not Liam Neeson, so fuck that guy. Like, I don't understand. He just, this poor guy, he even gets his little exit line. People are the train. I always knew it was gonna be the train.
I think that he died happy knowing that he could have that line.
He died happy.
I think
that might be a jump.
You know how sometimes you go, if I could just do X, I'll die happy? I think that every day that guy woke up and is like, I really would love it if the train killed me. I've been saying it for
and
30
I got to
years.
Say it.
And I just want to be right.
You know, he was like 3 days from retirement, right?
Oh my God, that could have been the only way that this movie would
pension.
Be better.
Yeah.
You know, 3 days I cash out my pension. My wife and I are moving to Maui. It's going to be great.
No, what would be even better is if he didn't have a wife or kid. And so the money from his pension goes to Liam Neeson's family because.
Why would
you know,
that happen?
Because he's just nice. He's a nice guy. And so it just works out that way.
Someone's
because
like,
Liam
hey.
Neeson lost the $25,000. So Liam Neeson is still in debt.
Someone
like,
walks over to Liam Neeson as
shit.
He is getting taken home despite his grievous injuries, which is another thing I love about movies like this. It's like, you've been stabbed in the kidneys. You've also been shot and beaten. Your wife is over there. She's going to take you home because I put some gauze on you. And then
I sprayed you with the spray. It heals all wounds.
Yeah, precise. It's like the spray from classic Wachowski siblings movie Jupiter Ascending.
What the fuck, Brian?
if you're counting, I think that's three or four.
Yeah. But it is. All right, so what else do we have to talk about? Allison, I feel like you haven't spoken in a second. Why don't you throw, do you have any other logic questions?
I have an endless string of logic questions, but I feel like, you know, earlier, I forget who said that the director is a true craftsman, and I think that that's true, but it's really well crafted otherwise too. The costume design in this film is great. It's really easy to bypass how important good costume design is in contemporary films. And I think from everything from the, from Vera Farmiga's character's shoes, which you just get in that one flash and they're so distinctive. And then the sort of like stylish, but covered up, unassuming thing. It would have been so easy to make her like a sex pot or something. And that's not the story that's being told, but it is really busy and loud. All of the passengers, you get a sense of who they are right away. Sometimes to their detriment, sometimes it's like so pushy and in your face, this is who this person is. But you really do get a sense right away. There's the moment when the terrible stockbroker, which is a stereotype I'm always happy to see. Like, that's one where I'm always like, yeah, please, more terrible stockbrokers. I love them.
Liam Neeson flicks them off.
Yeah, but around that time when he talks about his shoes and his watch and his suit and everything, it's all really true. It's really, like, it feels honest, though it is a little bit long and maybe not quite so plausible and definitely campy. I really like the fight scene in the empty car with the guitar and the fire axe, I guess.
Yeah. Right?
Really, it was so fun, and, like, thank God you can see all of it. Like, you can see what they're doing and the decisions they're making. Yeah, I just think, like, it's really well made. It's just a total mess that you have to really either turn off your brain to enjoy or just embrace the messiness. And I love movies like that, so, like, thumbs up. But outside of that, really, really well made, I think.
I will say that, so you haven't seen Nonstop, correct?
Correct.
Right, I think that Nonstop makes more sense. So you will, you might enjoy it, because it's still ludicrous. Like, don't get me wrong, it's bananas, but you at least won't have as many logic questions because the conspiracy is, I guess, more manageable when it's revealed.
I highly recommend Orphaned, which is like a bad taste, like cult classic from the last, like,
The Shallows, which is just, you know, girl versus shark.
Well, you know, I have a question. A question for all of you. Do you think it is worth bringing in an actor like Patrick Wilson, like someone who is really good at their job, if it gives away the twist of the entire movie? Because there's no way you bring in Patrick Wilson for like one scene in a phone call.
I'm wondering about that, because I think it was to that end, Roger Ebert had the kind of statement that was like, you look for the people that you know. And whoever has had, like, the least role so far is probably the one who done it. It's it's sort of the Law and Order rule.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, they got Chris Noth for this bit part. I bet he killed that person. Like, yep, he totally did.
Well, they do that with the... I can never fucking remember his name. Just Alan Grant from Jurassic
Park. Sam Neill.
And, yeah, Sam Neill, who's fantastic in everything. He needs to be in more fucking movies. But they do that with him, too. So they're kind of – they initially lead you to believe that maybe he's the bad guy right from the outset, which is always a big tell, because it's like, no, I've watched Scooby-Doo too much. Like, no, it's not the creepy person that you first see. It's the other person that you don't assume, right? But – so they weave both of those characters in, and I think by the end of the film, if it wasn't so notable that she says it was another police officer, like, it, had they not given that away, maybe Patrick Wilson would have still been okay in my book. But as soon as she said, oh yeah, it was a police officer, I'm like, well, then it's fucking Patrick Wilson, and he's about to board this train, and it's about to get fucking crazy, right?
Well, my thing is, it could be Patrick Wilson, or it could be Sam Neill, because to what you said, Allison, I'm like, okay, who are the two big name police officers that we saw. There's Sam Neill. There's Patrick Wilson. Now, Patrick Wilson always comes off a little shady, but Sam Neill has a beard. So who's the bad guy? I just don't know. And so I even though I knew that it was probably Patrick Wilson, I still had the question in the back of my head, because I was like, is Patrick Wilson going to be nice guy Patrick Wilson? Like, are we accidentally getting that? Or is it going to be something else? Like, is it going to be Sam Neill? You know, like, are we being set up to see delivered on what we assume is happening, or is it going to subvert us? So, like, my tension, I guess, was coming more from trying to predict the writing than the actual story. But I still enjoyed it, and that whole, you know, this. But I kind of, the second that Liam Neeson like broke the wire, I was like, oh, it's got to be Patrick Wilson then, because now he can monologue and no one's going to hear it. But I loved how that resolved itself, where he took the, the infrared tag and had it on his own body. And so they shoot Patrick
Wilson.
That
was pretty clever. Yeah, that was pretty clever.
Mm-hmm. Y'all are making me feel pretty stupid because I didn't see it coming.
Are you serious?
As soon as Patrick Wilson asked Liam Neeson if he took the money, I was like, oh shit, he's dirty. Like he's wondering if Liam Neeson is part of this, or if Liam Neeson is just like kind of an innocent bystander who has started to notice this weird shit happening. So as soon as Patrick Wilson was like, well, did you take the money? And I'm like, that's a fucking weird question.
I think, you know, at that point, though, you could be saying like, oh, he's a cop, so he wants to know if his friend has implicated himself. Like, that could be considered an in-kind contract, which would then make him, guilty of at least conspiracy.
Yeah, but I'm trying to worry about the conspiracy than just clearing your name at this point, right? Like, the more pressing concern is your fucking family.
At some point, I would love to call a friend of mine and, like, tell them something crazy just to see, like, in real life how credulous people are when something like this happens. You know, I want to just call a friend and be like, I was on the Silver Line today. I was going to work when a woman came up to me and said that she'd give me $100,000. All I had to do was like put a GPS tracker on a certain bus that was on my way to work. And I just want to see if this friend is like, Brian, it's fucking 7 o'clock in the morning. Shut up.
Yeah, I was just about to say, Brian, I am on my way. I need to merge onto this lane. I got to let you go.
Yeah, or it would just be someone screaming, I like, never call me, I'll text me, you know.
Why aren't you texting me this?
I just want to see, because like in this movie people tend to be pretty credulous, and I just need to know if that's because there's something in your voice, and or if I just need better fucking friends.
I will say I love that the guy that hands Liam Neeson the phone, his only concern is how much battery life did you leave me with? Because I got to play this fucking game.
Don't exit out of my game.
Don't exit out of my game. I was like, yes, yes, yes. Commuters, I love you so much.
It's a great dumb movie.
That should be on the poster. Great dumb movie.
Edit this entire podcast down to Michael Snydell laughing happily to himself while saying "great dumb movie." All right. Does anyone else have any other things that they want to talk about?
You know, the last thing I would like to say is I'm not sure who the casting director is on this. I'm looking that up as we speak. But I think that. Time in and time again, I think that he's just getting together great ensembles for each one of these movies. I mean, you could talk about Nonstop, and you have Scoop McNairy in there. You
Lupita?
Have Lupita Nyong'o. Have, who else am I thinking? Corey Stoll. Like, it's weird that, like, you can
Julianne Moore.
Julianne Moore. You can look at each one of these movies, and, like, there'll be someone in the bit cast who, like, became something big, like every one of these movies, and this one as well. I mean, Allison already mentioned Florence Pugh, and I don't know how to say her last name, but
that can't be right.
Pugh, it's Pugh.
Thank Michael you. Michael said Pugh.
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
Or Jonathan Banks, or you know, Either way, though, I really think that he gets together fantastic casts for every one of these, like, B-genre movies.
Well, like, Michelle Dockery was in Nonstop, and she was...
Yeah, she was great in that.
She's fucking great in Godless on Netflix, another great show. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, I think that it almost makes me wonder, like, do actors hunger for this? Like... Do they want, like, the 20-day shoot where they're just there and they're in normal clothes and they get to, like, say some nonsense every now and then? Like,
is less exhausting, I'm sure, than a lot of other things.
Well, I'm sure it's fun to play around with that because they're able to kind of either ham it up or, you know, kind of tone it down. But in this film, I imagine a lot of it is just, you know, until all hell breaks loose, you're kind of, you know, putting about, and then all hell breaks loose and you're able to just kind of ham it up and you're able to just have fun with it. You know, I don't know. I feel like there's definitely an interesting thing happening between the extras or kind of the bit players versus like the main kind of title people in this film. But I don't know. Like, it seems like a fun environment to be on.
Also, Jonathan Banks gets to say that he has a prostate like a watermelon, which is amazing.
No, doesn't he said a prostate as big as your head?
Oh, it's big. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So I knew it was about a prostate.
Bigger than your head.
All right.
Yeah. He also gets to correct Liam Neeson on which sister wrote Wuthering Heights. It's like, yes! I love this!
I do love, that's something, I love that, like, Liam Neeson in this movie is not the kind of guy who would, like, read a book, but he does it with his son, like, to be a part of, like, his life in some small way, which is, like, a really cute character detail.
Yeah.
And then
that opening sequence again, fuck. Jesus.
And then it comes in, because he sees the girl reading the Scarlet Letter, and he's like, Prin, yeah. I got it.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, shit. And this girl, of course, has no fucking clue what's going on because she's been wearing headphones.
She's like,
Prim. The time.
Yeah. I like that detail, too.
Also, I guess this will be my last thing. Liam Neeson bounces back real quick from getting fucking pepper sprayed.
Yeah. Okay.
I noticed that as well. I was like, that girl needs to turn in her pepper spray and be like, this is ineffective, sir.
I thought she missed. I but yeah, I was very confused about that as well.
Yeah. He should be down on the ground writhing for like at least 10 minutes, and then every time he sees anybody else, they should be like, are you all right, man? You seem like you're having a severe allergic reaction to something. And he's like, no,
also, it looks
I just
like
got
you've
pepper
been
sprayed.
Beaten by at least two different people. No, I mean, it's interesting because, like, and this is just, I guess, how the movie operates, but she, like, straight up tries to mace a dude, and then, like, suddenly they're sort of friendly, and he's like, mm-hmm. You know, you shouldn't let your boyfriend, like, tell you to do shit like this, and she's like, yeah, I know. Wait a second. Didn't I just mace you?
Why are you still talking to me right now?
This great dumb movie.
I guess I want to end it real quick with this. I'm just curious, are you guys tired of Liam Neeson doing this shtick? Do you want him to do something else? Do you want him to continue? I'm just curious what everybody thinks generally about this period in Liam Neeson's career, because everybody seems to focus on this.
Allison, why don't you kick us off with this final thought?
Oh, I'm having a hard time divorcing my opinions about Liam Neeson, the actor, from my opinions about Liam Neeson, the person who probably shouldn't talk mm-hmm. out of his ass at the moment. I think that this is a person who's had some tragic experiences in his life. And while there's a part of me that thinks, man, I wish we could get the Liam Neeson back who does like really textured, thoughtful character work. This is obviously a thing that he's good at. He has, as they say, certain skills. And if he wants to get paid for those, then more power to him. I think it's good that he has mostly good taste in these kinds of movies. Because there are some real stinkers out there. So yeah, if Liam Neeson wants to go through the rest of his life just kicking butt and separating train cars from other train cars, then I am okay with that.
All right, Bill Graham, what about yourself?
I'm so into it because they're at the very least kind of touching on his age. Again, I wish he would have fared a little worse in that guitar fight, I think he gets his head banged against a rail at least twice and seems none the worse for wear. I wish he would have had like some kind of staggered thoughts afterwards, like maybe if he was saying someone's name, maybe said it backwards or said something
Are
really
you kidding
weird.
Me?
I don't know.
You
like
wanted
something.
Him to have verbal dysphagia because of head trauma throughout 90% of this movie.
Wait, that sounds great. That sounds great.
That's like, it would be the last 20% of this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, like, I want him to at least, like, because he even mentions, he's like, I'm 60, I'm too old to be doing this, blah, 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 blah. And you're like, yeah, you are. And you're still doing these. I don't understand why, and obviously the guy that is like beating him up is like trained in MMA. It's just like, whoa, you are kicking me. Nobody kicks in a fucking fist fight. Like, who does that? Unless you're like trained in like jujitsu or some shit like that. Like, Jesus Christ. So
my favorite,
yeah, that's my thoughts.
My favorite subgenre of a fighting film is a brawler fighting an MMA person, and the brawler's big move is just to like absorb it until they can deliver a good punch to the face. We saw it in Cell Block 99. We saw it here. Mm-hmm. And I love it. It's a good time. Now, as for Liam Neeson, you know, I don't know. I think that he strikes a balance. You know, he's not Nicolas Caging or Bruce Willising it up. You know, he's still going for things that require some stuff. I mean, I don't want to have to play the nonstop clip again, but there's some really good acting going on and really sure. great character work. And I think that like in things like The Gray, you know, I know that people have thoughts on that movie. I think it is fucking flawless and perfect, and it moves me to tears every time I watch it. And I think that he strikes a balance in a way that a lot of other people don't bother trying to. You know, I think that as long as he keeps picking movies like this, or like if he only ever works with JCS, I keep saying on board. I swear to God, that's something I say all the time anyway. I'm not just doing it because of the train film.
Yep, yep.
But, I'm good. I could keep watching this. Now, if he were to say like next weekend that he was going to play, I don't know, George Washington or something, I'd be like, oh, that's cool. That's great. You know? But if he then conversely were to say next weekend, I'm going to be playing a 60-year-old retired police detective who's doing some stuff. You know, if he were to announce, let's say, a sequel to A Walk Among the Tombstones, I would probably be just as excited as if he said he was going to play George Washington.
Well, I got some good news for you, Brian, because he's announced to be the lead of something called Marlowe, which is some type of Philip Marlowe movie.
Oh, my God. Really? Are you serious?
Yes, yes, yes. Wait. No date yet or
oh my God.
Director.
Who's directing or who's doing anything?
No director yet. It's Monahan is the writer.
Oh, just him.
The guy who did The Departed?
Yep.
Oh my God, this is the coolest thing ever. Though I think he's a little too old to play Marlowe, so is this going to be like Mr. Holmes?
Ian McKellen Holmes. One. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Mr.
Yeah.
Holmes.
Oh, God. He's also doing a Steve McQueen movie
Widows.
That Gillian Flynn is writing the screenplay for. Yeah. Good Lord.
Whoa.
John Bernthal's in there. Daniel Kaluuya.
Hell yeah.
Colin Farrell. Yeah. Carrie Coon. Alert. Alert. Carrie Coon. Alert. Viola Davis. Holy crap. Okay. I'm excited about that one.
Yeah. So according to IMDb, as bad business and loneliness is taking its toll on private detective Philip Marlowe, a beautiful blonde arrives asking him to find her ex-lover, which proves to be just a small part in a bigger mystery. First of all, literally the concept of every Philip Marlowe book that I've ever read.
Yeah.
Except
yeah.
sometimes
that sounds
she's
like
a redhead.
Chinatown.
Yeah. But I do kind of love the idea of like a 60s set, a 60s set Marlowe film. Like, you know, he's 20 years past his prime. And
is it Long Goodbye? You know, 60? Oh, I guess that's 70s. But is that Marlowe?
That is Marlowe, yeah.
Okay.
But Philip Marlowe is like supposed to be like, I would say 40 in the books, like at the oldest.
Yeah, and Jack Reacher also is supposed to be like 6'2 and like 230 pounds, so who gives
a
fuck?
But I just think it'd be interesting to like really play into that, like to say like this is what a PI looks like after he's stopped being cool.
I would also like to direct you guys.
I would argue that he is still.
Wait, guys. Bill, Allison speaking.
Oh, that's okay. No, go ahead. I'm changing the subject, so continue.
Oh, no.
I was just saying that I still would like to posit that Liam Neeson is still cool.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, and here, now I'll segue. To prove that, I will direct you slightly up on his upcoming films list on IMDb to Hard Powder. A snowplow driver seeks revenge against the drug dealers he thinks killed his son, based on the 2014 Norwegian film In Order of Disappearance, starring
I love that movie.
Laura Dern and Emmy Rossum.
Oh, man.
So, what?
I feel like...
All right, Liam Neeson's awesome. Never mind.
This might sound crazy, but I feel like we have discovered that this movie is happening like three different times on this podcast, and we constantly forget about it.
This is too good. That Norwegian film, by the way, is a lot of fun. It's really good. Like, it has great comedic timing, and yeah, it's delightful. It's also like 2.5 hours long, so it's way too long, but it is a lot of fun.
God damn it, Bill. All right, well, that's it. That's it for today. Speaking of things that are too long, we've been talking for 1.5 hours, so let's wrap it up. Those are our thoughts on The Commuter. It's out in theaters now. And
great dumb movie.
Great, great dumb movie. Great dumb movie. And let's wrap it up. You can find this podcast on Twitter at Film Stage Show. Go to patreon.com/thefilmstageshow. In order to help us create more great stuff for y'all this month, because of Patreon supporters, we are going to be recording a classic review of Paris, Texas by Wim Wenders. And if you'd like to help us do stuff like that, patreon.com/thefilmstageshow for as little as $1 an episode. You can also go to mubi.com/filmstage and get a free 30 month. Wouldn't that be something?
Wow.
30-day trial of Mubi, the online streaming cinema, where every day they introduce a new film for you to watch. You have 30 days. You constantly have 30 films to check out. They got some great stuff, including The Trip and The Trip to Italy on there currently. So if you'd like a free 30-day trial, go to mubi.com/filmstage. And that is it for today. We hope you've enjoyed listening to us as we talked about The Commuter. Next weekend, we'll be talking about...
We do have something to plug. Jordan did interview with the DP. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes, with the DP of The Commuter. And so they talk a little bit about the opening sequence. And I think the DP has done like some other notable films besides just The
His name is and, Paul Cameron, and he's done a lot of Michael Mann films, including Collateral, one of my favorites.
All right. So, Well, check that out at thefilmstage.com. Next week, I don't. We have a list.
Paddington.
I don't remember what's on it. I'm down to do Paddington. I really want to see that movie.
Me too.
But we also have things
love
like
me some bears.
The Post, which doesn't have any bears. The Phantom Thread, which I'm not sure if it has. But it also takes place in London, right? So Paddington could be there, right?
Yes, I don't remember any cameos from him, but you know, it's been a little while.
Walking around with a flower pot on his foot in the background.
Is the Phantom Thread in the Paddington cinematic universe? That's the real question. Anyway, we'll talk about something. We'll figure it out at some point. Let's tell the fine people where you can be found between now and next week, which again, I almost said month. I don't know what's wrong with me. I may have verbal dysphagia. Bill Graham.
You can find me on Twitter at CableVFG, and you can find me most prominently on the Slack channel for our Patreon subscribers, and having fun over there. Yeah.
All right. Allison Shoemaker.
Oh, well, you can find me on Twitter at Allison Shoe, and if you enjoy hearing me cackle about things that don't make sense, you can also hear me on Podlander Drunkcast and Outlander Podcast, which is at Podlandercast, and on Debating Doctor Who, which is at Debating DW.
All right, and Michael Snydell.
You can find me extolling the virtues of many great dumb movies on Twitter at Snydell. And I'm on Letterboxd as well, just at Snydell.
All right, and as always, you can find me on Twitter at Brian J. Rowan, my personal site, dearfilm.net, writing and stuff over at thefilmstage.com. And yeah, it's enough. That'll hold you over until next week. So thank you so much once again, ladies and gentlemen, and tune in next week. Secrets I couldn't keep. Promised myself I wouldn't weep. But one more promise I couldn't keep. It seems no one can help me. All right.